It's 5 p.m. and this is IC Radio. 95% of Earth's oceans are unexplored. Despite making the leap to space exploration more than 50 years ago, the depth of our oceans are still a mystery. Oceans cover 71% of Earth's surface and are huge carbon sinks, moderators of Earth's climate, and home to incredibly important biodiversity. This week's show looks into what it's actually like to work in the ocean as a marine biologist, the challenges facing aquatic biodiversity, the impacts of climate change on the ocean, and how we humans are helping to combat these issues. Today, I'm joined in the studio by marine biologist Mariana Knepers, and we will explore the mystery of our oceans together. Welcome.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
And I'm Jackie Wakefield, your iScience radio editor, and Rena is in the studio producing the show. So before we get started, we have Harry with the news.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to iScience Weekly News. This week, we'll be talking about Extinction Rebellion, the effect of Brexit on British science, and the first all-female spacewalk. So, Extinction Rebellion. You would have seen this weekend they held their finale in central London after 2 weeks of protests, despite police banning their demonstrations in the capital. You would have seen the iconic images of protesters being dragged from the tube, Boris Johnson scaring Big Ben, and those cloaked in red robes. The group's non-violent civil disobedience looks to draw attention to the global climate crisis, and for drastic measures to be put in place to mitigate the impact. The protests also coincided with the release of the government's new environmental bill, which aims to improve air and water quality, tackle plastic pollution, restore wildlife, and protect the climate. However, Extinction Rebellion weren't the only ones protesting in London this weekend, as 1 million protesters gathered to demand a second Brexit referendum. Prior to the march, the first figures emerged showing the negative impact that Brexit, even though it hasn't happened yet, has already had on UK research. Since 2015, Britain's annual share of EU research funding has fallen by a third, UK applications to Horizon 2020 fallen by 40%, and the number of researchers choosing to come to UK via EU schemes has fallen by 35%. This was published by the Royal Society, whose president Venki Ramakrishnan says scientists just don't want to gamble with their careers by coming to the UK. In happier news though, we had the first all-female spacewalk this week, with Christina Cook and Jessica Meyer having made history. The NASA astronauts spent 7 hours outside the ISS replacing a failed power control unit. The spacewalk, officially known as an extravehicular activity, or an EVA, let's stick to spacewalk, was originally due to take place in March with Cook and fellow astronaut Anne McLean, but was delayed as there was only one medium-sized spacesuit on board. Having learnt from the lesson, it seems, NASA revealed the prototype of their new spacesuit this week as well, which can fit all astronauts, including women. The suit's going to be used in the Artemis program, the goal of which is to land the first ever woman on the moon.
How exciting! Did you guys watch the live stream of the spacewalk?
Oh, yeah.
Not all of it, not all 7 hours.
Not 7 hours of it. I watched about 15 minutes.
Yeah, I had it on for about 2 hours.
Really?
Well, I was doing work at the same time, so I wasn't really, like, fully watching it the entire time, but
did you watch what actually happened? Like, what? Like, the time I was watching it, there weren't even any people on screen. They were just, like, talking.
Oh, no, like, I saw there was somebody dangling out of, you know, the space structure.
So cool.
And doing something. And they were explaining it, and they were answering questions live. It was quite interesting, but
man, that's awesome.
It's funny, though, because they call it an all-female spacewalk, but there are only two.
Yeah.
It's just... but I feel like it doesn't
It's the best they've done so far.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really say, like, the only double woman spacewalk.
No. Both and I don't know if they ever have more than two people in a spacewalk.
I believe it's only two.
Yeah,
usually.
So
I guess it makes sense.
I was listening to a podcast this morning that talked about it. They were like, aren't there only two women? Isn't it a both woman spacewalk?
So just to clear it up, like, for people who wouldn't know what a spacewalk is, what actually is it, like... Do you guys know?
So essentially, like, it's when they go out into space from the International Space Station.
Yeah.
So they're kind of not inside anything. So it's like actually in space.
Just, like, in space.
Okay. And so in this case, they were coming outside of the station to go fix something, which is the power control unit.
So cool. I kind of, like, pictured in my head just, like, a bunch of, like, female astronauts walking in a line on the moon for some reason. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
The arms of, like, the space International Space Station just doing
exactly little space dance.
Yeah, it's literally really like walk, though. It's more of a drift. If you see them, they're like dragging themselves around the ship, which it's is insane. Kind of terrifying. If no, exactly. You think about it.
Also, everyone's in gravity.
Yeah, so true. And also, when you said, Harry, that funding fell by a third, is that because it's EU science funding? Just back to Brexit, sorry.
So as in, yeah, as in the amount that we've received from the EU has fallen by a third. Like, we still technically can get the money.
Yeah.
But, like, applications have fallen, like, number of people coming here has fallen, so the actual money we've got from them. Just because it's, like, risky, like, no one's going to know what's happened.
Oh, my God. I wonder what is going to happen.
Yeah.
I was like...
Does that concern us?
It does. Yeah, for international, so me and Mariana... international people.
I have my visa already.
It won't affect us. It will only affect people from the EU and from people from the UK as well. So we'll be fine. So it's I think if you've got a visa, you're fine. Yeah.
But can you come into the country without a visa?
As an EU citizen, I think you can.
Yeah, as an EU citizen, you can. Right. At the moment.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's going to be interesting. Yeah. And did either of you guys watch the video of Boris climbing Big Ben?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was... Sorry, someone just kind of tried to come into the studio. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
I found that, like, odd to watch, to be honest. Like, I didn't
even hear it.
Yeah, it was, like, one of the Extinction Rebellion protesters climbed up Big Ben, because, like, at the moment, it's got...
scaffolding around it.
Yeah. So it's quite... it looked reasonably easy to climb. I bet it's not actually that easy.
I think he was also a tree surgeon, so he's used to climbing up things.
Oh!
Casual tree surgeon.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. But, yeah, it was an odd image to see this guy, like, in a blonde wig climbing up Big Ben.
Oh, he was... wearing
Boris dressed up as Boris Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah, it was so weird.
Did he go all the way to the top?
It didn't look like... It was hard to tell with the scaffolding, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I seem to imagine him being by the clock face, but I might be imagining that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, it was so weird to watch that.
This up.
Yeah, so I guess it's time to go to our first song. So to get us in the mood for some... ocean vibes this episode, I decided to play Blue by Willow Beats.
Without you, but I'll never have to think about that. No one ever had to think about that. Shade my soul with colors of blue, and I wait for the day I go back. I wait for the day I go back. I so know. Do what I think about. I know what you think about that. Oh, think about that. Shade so my echo, my echo. I know with colors of blue. Echo back, echo back. I so know. Do what I think about. I know what you think about that. Oh, think about that. Shade so my echo, my echo. I know with colors of blue. So don't do that. Think about that. I know what I do without you. Think about that. Oh, think about that. But I'm about to shake the soul. My echo, my echo. I know what you want about the colors of blue. Echo back, echo back. Shake so my do that. Think about that. I know what colors of blue. Think about that. Oh, think about that. And I wait for shake so my echo, my echo. I know what you want for the day. Echo back.
So that was Blue by Willow Beats. So I just want to set the mood with a poem by Matthew Arnold called Dover Beach. For those who don't know, Dover's about like an hour and a half east of London. I want to say east.
There's ocean on that side. Yeah. Well, there's ocean on all sides of the
it's
UK.
It's an island.
So. You are correct.
Good start, good start. Mm. My family's from Dover, so I should know. All right, let's get into it. The sea is calm tonight. The tide is full. The moon lies fair. Upon the straits, on the French coast, the light gleams and is gone. The cliffs of England stand, glimmering and vast, out in the tranquil bay. Come to the window, sweet is the night air. Only from the long line of spray, where the sea meets the moon-blanked land. Listen, you hear the grating roar of pebbles which the waves draw back and fling at their return up the high strand, begin and cease and then again begin with tremulous cadence slow, and bring the eternal note of sadness in. Sophocles long ago heard it on the Egan, and it brought into his mind the turbid ebb and flow of human misery. We find also in the sound of thought, hearing it by this distant northern sea. Ah, that makes me really want to go to Dover.
Have you been before?
Like once?
I've never been.
It's actually really pretty. You should come with me one time.
Yes, take me with you. I need to explore all of the UK.
Yeah, so. I want to explore UK oceans more because I feel like they'd be very interesting.
I asked people today, I was like, what do people do when they go to the beach in the UK? And they're like, oh, we swim. I was like, you swim? It must be so cold.
But the beaches here are really rocky as well.
Yeah. Apparently in the south, they have some of the best surfing, though. And people go there in the summer.
Best surfing for UK.
Yeah, coming from Australia, yeah. I'm sure. And like California.
California should be pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Well, let's hear from you then, Mariana. Let's explore the sea a bit.
Yeah.
Under the depths of the ocean.
Yeah. Well, this is actually more of a... I guess more of an industrial story.
Ooh,
I don't know how to describe this. Well, I'll just jump right into it. Yeah. So what I have today is an article from Atlas Obscura that talks about saturation diving, which is a pretty intense and indeed an obscure career choice. Mm-hmm. Well, most of you have probably heard of scuba or scuba diving, which is a popular recreational sport for thousands. The max depth for recreational divers is about 40 meters or 130 feet for those of you in America on the imperial system listening.
No one uses that system.
Yeah, I know. It's really tragic, but unfortunately, it's what I was taught. Anyway, saturation divers, they actually dive to as deep as 1,000 feet. So compare that to 130 feet, 1,000 feet. Yeah.
Crazy.
Or more, actually, below the surface of the water. And these are commercial divers that primarily work on offshore rigs, wells, and pipelines, performing construction and demolition work. Now, Jackie and I are both divers, so we're pretty familiar with the physiology that occurs during diving. But for the benefit of everyone else, let me just give you a little bit of background. As a diver, you breathe compressed air from a tank on your back, which is made up of the same composition of the air we're breathing now, which is approximately 78% nitrogen, 20% oxygen, 1% argon, and whatever's left in that math that I can't think of right now is just other guesses. As you descend in the water column, the pressure increases rather rapidly, with an additional atmosphere of pressure added for each 33 feet that you descend. And for reference, at sea level, we live at 1 atmosphere of pressure. So each 33 feet that you descend underwater, you get another atmosphere laid on top of you. So it happens quite quickly.
Yeah.
And this increase in pressure causes the inert gases in the air that we're breathing to diffuse into the bloodstream. And this diffusion rate actually increases the deeper you are because there is more of that partial pressure being exerted. Now, this isn't a problem when we're at depth, but this means that ascending in the water column has to be done at quite a slow rate in order to allow these gases to come out of the bloodstream and the body tissues. If a diver ascends too rapidly, these gases can spontaneously form bubbles, kind of like the bubbles if you open up a soda can. So imagine that happening
so
inside
terrifying.
Of your body tissues.
Oh, man. I remember when I first got my license and they talked about this and I was like, do I want to do this?
Yeah. Like, during my dive master training, I was so paranoid because sometimes we'd have people on the dives who would just shoot up to the surface because they would panic.
Oh, God, that's terrifying.
And then you'd have to try to like grab them and bring them back down. But sometimes you get up with them.
Up as well.
And the good thing is a lot of it is quite shallow diving. So it's like, what, maybe
especially their first time, it wouldn't go. They would go too deep.
Maybe even like 15 meters. And so coming up too fast from that, you probably have more issues with like lung overexpansion if you're holding your breath.
Also terrifying.
Yeah. Also, there's just a lot about scuba diving that is just very scary.
Don't you have to go into like a decompression tank then as well? Like,
So this condition is called the bends, which is what everybody knows it as. And there's a story behind it. If we have time, I'll explain it.
Yeah.
But essentially, the treatment for it is recompression in a chamber, a recompression chamber.
Yeah.
And you're set there. I think you have to go for a number of weeks at a time.
Yeah.
But basically, it kind of slowly allows those gases to kind of dissolve, like reverse bubble.
Yeah.
I don't know what the terminology is.
I think the way they like described it to me is like kind of when you have gas trapped in like your stomach and you burp, like it's a bit like redistributing the bubbles to make them like small and then dissipate.
Because the issue is if you gotta shrink them so then they can go back in the bloodstream and then you breathe it back out.
Horrible.
Yeah, absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I definitely think that plays into it.
Yeah. So just for context there, our producer just said, does that have anything to do with solubility?
Yeah. And I think that plays into it, but
yeah,
I really don't know how. I do know that it's been mentioned in the conversations.
There's so much science behind it.
There's so much physiology. It's a lot. Anyway, well, these are the basics. Imagine if this is the basics. Imagine actually diving. Anyway, so this is the bends. And so obviously this is important because, you know, depending on how long you've been at depth, at your deepest depth, and how deep that depth is dictates how long it will take you to safely ascend to the surface. For example, so diving to 250 feet for an hour. Sorry, I can't convert that into meters. So what is that?
Divide
meters?
By three. So it'd be about like 90 meters.
Yeah, something
80,
like
90?
That. Yeah. So if you're at that depth for an hour, for example, it would take 5 hours to ascend to avoid getting even slightly bent.
God.
Yeah. So now you have the background on diving physiology, which is perfectly fine and great for normal recreational divers. But saturation divers, when they're at depths of 1,000 feet, which 330 meters or something.
Yeah,
even more than that. So because they're working so deep, it would take them days to ascend safely from their working depth. And so because of this, they actually have to live literally under pressure for weeks at a time to avoid becoming bent. So they actually live in small pressurized capsules, mainly aboard ships or underwater attached to the oil rig itself. And quick story, I didn't have this written down in here, but in the article, it also explains kind of the problems that involve, you know, living so deep and having to take so much time to get back up to the surface. Yeah. There was one saturation diver they were talking about who, because you can have phone calls down there. I don't know how that works, but you can talk on the phone. And so you keep in touch with your family, which is quite nice.
It'd be like a satellite phone or something, surely. Like what they, what you use in like wilderness.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It worked 1,000 feet crazy. Under, but well, they actually don't live. I'll get to that point later. Regardless, this worker, his wife, had a miscarriage and he was about 7 days into this job. And it would have taken him another 7 days to surface. And over the phone, they had this discussion where the wife was like, no, you have to stay down there. We need the money. It wouldn't make much sense. So it's really tough. Like, you make a lot of sacrifices. Tough. You're gone for weeks at a time. It's crazy.
But it must be like, is it like working on like, I mean, I know in Australia, like there's like oil rig jobs where you go out to the field for a month and then you get a month off. Like,
essentially, I think that's how it is. Yeah, because they actually are, they're not living underwater that entire time. They're just living under that pressure. So they live in this pressurized capsule that's either on the ships or the oil rig itself. So when they're commuting to work, they use diving bells, which are also pressurized. And it kind of allows this transport that, you know, takes them down to the bottom, and then they're at pressure already, so they can just kind of exit the diving bell, do their work, and then when they're done, go back in the diving bell, shoot back up, and yeah. But because it's pressurized, obviously, then you don't have the issues with being bent.
Yeah.
But the article highlights one diver, Steve Twiddle, who spent 28 days at 426 feet, which is quite shallow by saturation diving terms.
About 100 and something meters.
Yeah. And even so, at this depth, Tweedle was experiencing a pressure of 190 psi. And for reference, the one atmosphere that we're living at, that translates to 14.7 psi.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. So the initial trip down, or the pressurization, is quite harsh on their bodies. They call this the blowdown, and it leaves them achy for hours or even days at a time. And there's a quote here from one of the saturation divers that says, anything not solid or liquid is affected by the physics of the gas. And so the cartilage in your joints is porous and shrinks for a couple days. All your joints hurt or click with movement.
Ooh.
Yeah. So they get paid a lot. So, I mean, this isn't for nothing. But
yeah. Do you know how much they get paid out of interest?
Oh, my gosh. I don't. I have to look up the number. But I remember looking it up and being just floored.
Right. After the next song, we'll come back and fact check the number and say what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is all even before the work has actually begun. In terms of their living scenario, they live in these capsules that are quite small and uncomfortable. There was one account where they said there was a crew of six, but they only shared three beds because they would swap between shifts. So, like, when one shift was working, the others were sleeping and vice versa. Oh, so their body clocks on top of everything already.
Yeah.
Totally messed up. And also, I don't know if you ever learned this in your diving training or if this is just something they do at dive master level, but we learn about something called oxygen toxicity. And does that ring a bell at all?
It does, but I can't remember what it means.
Yeah, so basically it's the idea that under a certain partial pressure, specifically at 1.6 atmospheres, the oxygen in your system, basically, how did I explain this? Let's see. It's at around 66 meters.
Yeah.
This partial pressure causes too much oxygen in your to diffuse into your system, and it actually is toxic and affects our central nervous system. So that can cause convulsions, which that deep underwater is pretty bad news because your regulator or the thing that you breathe from can fall out of your mouth. Also, you're convulsing, so you can't really function at all.
Yeah, and it's like dangerous for your buddy as well. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
And you should always go diving with a buddy.
Yes, anybody who's interested in diving or is a diver knows. Always be with a buddy.
Always.
So this might be a problem at, you know, the pressures that they're experiencing.
Yeah.
So in order to solve this, they actually breathe a different mix of air called heliox, which has a higher percentage of helium, and it allows just enough oxygen that, you know, you can survive. But because helium is seven times lighter than air and sound travels faster through it,
I mean, I'm sure you've inhaled air from a balloon. So
always.
Oh, yeah. So you know you have like a super high-pitched voice. You sound absurd. So they live for weeks at a time in this chamber, and on top of everything, they sound like Daffy Duck the entire time. God. Yeah, it's crazy.
I feel like that's a perk of the job, though.
Kind of. Okay. In some ways, it is. Like, one of the guys was talking about it in the article, and he said when they want to call their family, they sound really funny. So his kid, I guess he was talking to his child on his birthday, and he was like, sometimes I can't understand my daddy because sounds like Daffy Duck, and I don't speak duck. It's the cutest thing.
Oh, that's adorable. Also, like,
really sad, but also really adorable.
It's kind of cute. I kind of like it.
Exactly. But it also makes communication really difficult between people, because if you're like me and you have really bad hearing already, having like an awkward sounding person, you know, it's quite difficult to understand them. And on top of that, they're from all different countries, so they already have accents. So it's so confusing, and communication is so vital for a job like this.
Especially like you're by yourself, like you want to be able to talk to people.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you're living with these people. I don't know, maybe it makes it more entertaining that you have to like work through
kind
that
of a game.
Yeah, I guess. But another interesting thing is that because helium has very poor thermal properties, the thermostat in the chamber they're living in is turned up to 90 degrees Fahrenheit, just to clarify, which is about like
30 degrees Celsius-ish.
Yeah. Like that. Hot. Like a hot summer day.
Yeah.
They have to turn it up because the divers are always cold because of that poor thermal property of helium.
Course.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a day in the life. The article goes on. I would highly recommend reading it, but it explains all about, you know, the different types of work they do. There's
what's
one point.
The article called again?
The Weird, Dangerous, and Isolated Life of the Saturation Diver.
There you go. If anyone wants to go listen to that, we'll also pop that link on social media if anyone's
keen to go to that. Super, super cool read. And they have pictures and a bunch of different stories.
So cool.
I don't know how we are on time, but I could maybe elaborate on some of those stories.
Well, let's hear more about that after the next song.
Okay.
So we can explore some like different stories of conservation.
Yes.
So before that, let's hear the song Soaked by New Zealand artist Benny.
Ooh.
Pedal back, you're bragging. Your preaching has got me confused. Sky high opinion, and you speak like there's something to prove. Well, how can you believe that you matter as much as you do? You ask the devil in your door. I'm not here, I'm not here to be walked on.
don't even know me. You've gone at this all back to front. You'll drag it out with the inevitable. I'll give you no reason to stay, stay, stay. I'm not here to be walked all over. Oh, your head is for a cold, cold shoulder.
So that was Cold Shoulder by The Fabrics. Not Soaked by Benny, but that's okay. Cold Shoulder is also a cool song, so go check that out. The lead singer is Angie McMahon, and she actually has her own solo work as well, which is very, very cool. Sorry, New Zealanders. I know Benny's New Zealand and Angie McMahon is Australian, so sorry for that lack of representation there. But as promised, Mariana's going to tell us this little diving horror story. Go for it.
Okay, it is saturation diver related, so it's not recreational diving, so this isn't something that's normal.
You don't need to worry about this.
Yeah, so essentially one of the divers was talking about a story. It was one of the saturation diving's worst accidents. It occurred in 1983. Essentially, when... You know, I mentioned they have to get into the dive bell in order to go down to depth. So while this was happening, I think Rena knows this story. Oh my gosh. Wow. She's like waving at me. She's like, I know this. So what happened was the dive bell and the pressure chamber together have this sealed and they're both at the same pressure. But what happens is if that seal isn't complete for some reason, it can be really hectic. I mean, the article says when a dive bell was detached from the transfer hatch before it was completely sealed. And so what happened was a huge explosion. Four divers and one dive technician were killed instantly and gruesomely. Yeah.
Like, so what did it do? So what's it full of? It's full of air?
Yeah. So
like pressurized air.
Exactly, yeah. So because they have to stay under pressure, remember, and this is them basically being transferred from their living quarters to the diving bell, which is going to take them down to depth.
Yeah.
And so because both of those capsules are under such high pressure and the surrounding area is not at that same pressure, it's low pressure, if there's any leak in that seal, it just causes mass explosion. God. And they actually link the article links it to the forensic medicine and pathology article that refers to this specific case. And I'm just going to read the abstract really quick. Four divers in a compression chamber system were suddenly decompressed from 9 atmospheres to 1 atmosphere. One of the divers was about to close the door between the chamber system and the trunk when the accident happened. He was shot out through the door and severely mutilated. The three others died on the spot. The autopsy results are described. The most conspicuous finding was large amounts of fat in the large arteries and veins and in the cardiac chambers, as well as intravascular fat in the organs, especially the liver. This fat can hardly have been embolic. I'm not entirely sure what that means.
I'll check.
We're going to have a
Yes. It means causing piece of material inside What? A blockage causing piece of material inside a blood vessel. Yeah. Oh, so pretty much our producer just said the fat like comes out of the blood vessel into the bloodstream, which is terrifying.
It literally says this fat can hardly have been embolic, but must have dropped out of the blood in situ. Okay, so that makes sense. It is suggested, this is the most disturbing sentence, and it's the last one of the abstract classic.
Great.
It is suggested that the boiling of the blood denatured the lipoprotein complexes, rendering the lipids insoluble. So their blood literally boiled from the pressure change.
Oh my god.
And yeah, it's I don't know if I want to read the rest of that.
Luckily they are paid, I checked this during the song, they're paid $1,400 per day that they're down there.
Yep.
Which is a lot, but like, considering that happens,
what is the appeal?
Okay, so say if you were like, what is that exactly? Like $1,400 a day, and say you're there for like 100 days.
Yeah.
What's that? What's 100 times?
Oh, it just add two zeros.
So that's 140,000 US dollars. That doesn't seem like that much, to be honest. I don't know, that's a lot. It's a lot, but like not enough to like literally die and give up your life.
I guess it really depends on what you value.
Yeah.
And what do you think is a reasonable price, you know?
I value money.
Well, the thing is, they have a paragraph at the end where they literally ask them, they're like, why are you into this?
Yeah.
And it's something about, let's see, it's something about the isolation and the discipline that's involved that they're drawn to, and of course the money, they say.
Yeah.
But it might also be the idea that they're working on the edges of human capability, facing danger with calm and planning.
Yeah.
Members of a club with very, very few members. They are very similar to astronauts, the article says, but nobody's ever heard of them. And
it is like that because, as I said, like, they're pretty much exploring places that no one else has ever been. It's pretty much like going to the moon.
It's true. It's true. So,
yeah, I guess that's pretty fair reasoning. Speaking of that, though, I thought that we could share, because both of us have done lots of fieldwork stuff, that we could both share some of our horror stories in the field. You said that you had a rash story to tell.
I have a rash compilation. I don't know. It's not a silly story. It's just, okay, well, for context, Jackie's heard this a number of times already. But I have, for the past year, been working / volunteering / being very poorly paid in conservation work, doing marine conservation stuff. And so I spent 6 months in the Seychelles. The first 3 months I was doing volunteer coral restoration research. And the second 3 months I was doing my dive master. And after that I came home for a month, and then I went off to Haiti for 3 months to do proper coral restoration work. So just living in those environments, they're very humid tropical environments and conducive to a number of illnesses and ailments. And so I experienced a number of different rashes.
Let's
and it
go.
Just became a theme. So the first one
rash number one
was in the Seychelles, working on the conservation base. We lived in the middle of the jungle, and they have these bugs there called, well, they have two bugs. One of them is the hairy caterpillar. I always called it the fuzzy caterpillar, but it's hairy because fuzzy makes it sound cute. These are horrible, horrible little caterpillars, and they're covered, as you might assume, with hair.
Yeah.
And if these hairs come in contact with your skin, it causes this like bubbly rash, and it lasts for weeks. Well, not weeks. That's an exaggeration. About a week and a half.
Yeah. It's a long time to have a
rash. Oh my gosh. Awful. And it spreads. Like, these are massive areas of this rash. And I got a hairy caterpillar rash on three different occasions. The first one, I couldn't figure out what it was, but I just kept getting these like dots all over my stomach, and it was just horribly itchy, and I just, just mind-bogglingly itchy. And it turns out it was because I was using the mats in the workout room area. We lived on like an abandoned school property, so like workout room is a glorified name. It's
very
literally
haunted.
yeah exactly. But we literally were using like rocks for working out, and there was like one yoga mat, which was disgusting. But so I was just on the floor like stretching, I guess, and I'd take it off my shirt. And so I was just in like a sports bra, and I guess on the floor the hairy caterpillars had left little hairs. And so I was just covering myself in these for weeks at a time and had no idea. One time I found one in my bed, And that was the third time I'd gotten that rash. And I literally walked out of the room. We were sharing a room with eight people. And so I literally got out of bed, went to the bathroom, saw that it was the rash, walked back into the room and started crying. I was like, guys, it's hairy caterpillar again. Like, I was so upset. I just reached my limit. But so that was rash number one, I guess, in three ways.
Yeah.
That's awful. I think there were only two rashes now that I think of it. Because the second rash was when I was in Haiti, and it was something that... Sorry, I'm getting distracted. Do I have time for the story?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. So basically, it was another similar situation where it was coming on my stomach and my legs, and I didn't really know what it was, and it was just really gross and oozy and nasty. Ugh. And I had it for like weeks at a time, and when I wasn't using my wetsuit, it stopped. And I was like, oh, interesting. And I found out... This is kind of embarrassing. I don't know if I should be announcing this.
All right.
Well, it's because I was peeing in my wetsuit, which is quite uncommon. Everybody
pees in their wetsuit. When you are cold in the ocean, you're going to pee in your wetsuit.
Any diver who says they haven't peed in a wetsuit is lying. Absolutely lying.
Like, what are you going to do? Like, you're down there, and if you're busting to pee, you're going to pee.
Yeah,
sorry.
And we were down for like two and a half hours at a time. So
no
I'm like,
judgment here.
No,
sorry.
No way.
And you want to stay hydrated. Sorry.
Exactly. Well, what's disgusting, though, is that I guess – I'd peed in my wetsuit before, but, like, had flushed it out. And I'd been obviously rinsing my wetsuit out, but I guess not well enough.
Yeah.
And so, essentially, what I had was a diaper rash. Like, the equivalent of a diaper rash on my body. As a 23-year-old human, I had diaper rash. It was so gross. Like, that was probably the lowest point for me in the past year.
It's okay. We've all had diaper rash, I guess.
Yeah, so. But usually you grow out of it by the time you reach at least 1 year old.
At least you have, like, a cool reason for it.
Is it? It's because I'm urinating in my own.
Because you don't want to tell too many people. That's why, as well.
But it's such a typical thing in diving.
At least
it's so normal.
Everyone who's diving is peeing, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's true. But you just—I mean, it made sense. You're sitting in your own urine for like 2.5 hours. I mean, I'd flush my wetsuit out, but I guess not well enough. So I don't know.
Man. Oh yeah, man,
not great. Not
like,
great.
I have like an equally gross story as far as like that
it'll
goes.
Make me feel better.
It should make you feel better. But unfortunately, it's not from the ocean. Sorry, this is a terrestrial conservation story.
It's still conservation.
But I was working as a park ranger in New Zealand, and there was one place that we had to go to monitor giant weta, which are a big insect, which was very cool. Ooh. But it's in this huge reserve, which is covered with all these spiky plants, so you're like crawling under them, going up and down hills. It's so muddy, like no paths. It's you're pretty much like chopping through these like bushes with
like
massive, yeah, you are bushwhacking, but through huge spiky plants and just getting completely scratched up. So mostly you're crawling all day. You're completely by yourself in the middle of this reserve, and
wait, just single person.
Yeah, single person.
That seems to go against every...
We had radios. Okay. It was fine. It was pretty safe.
Every regulation I've ever heard in science.
Yeah, but we were professionals, you know, so...
Oh, I guess.
So, yeah, we'd be, like, crawling around all day, and there were a lot of goats in the reserve, nice. Which sounds random, but it will all come together later, I promise. So you'd sit down at lunchtime, you'd eat lunch, continue about your day. And at the end of the week, me and three other rangers all got tummy bugs. And we were just like, how odd. Like, maybe we all got gastro or something. But no, we realized the whole week none of us had been washing our hands before eating. And we had been pretty much eating goat poo.
What?
Like, all week. Like, we were eating, like, food and stuff just, like, covered with goat shit.
But it wasn't, like, genuine goat poo, was it?
It was everywhere.
But would you see it?
Yeah, well, our supervisor came and she was like, that's goat poo. And we were like, we just thought that was dirt. Like,
that
so our hands was just, like, covered in dirt poo. Goat poo.
Oh, my. Dirt
yeah,
poo.
Yeah, dirt poo. And there was, like, one ranger who, like, didn't get sick. And we're like, Hannah, why didn't you get sick? And she was like, guys, I, like, actually washed my hands before eating. We're like, fair call.
That's a pretty convincing argument there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, wow. So at least you haven't eaten poo.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, they say that eating some animals' poo is nutritional.
We'll look into that. But,
I might have just pulled that out of
we can fact check that
I
in the
really
next song.
I really don't know if it's true. But
let's go to the next song. So apologies if you don't like Kanye, but I'm really in the mood to play a bit of Kanye West. It's Ultralight Beam. It's a good song, you guys. He's a stupid person, but we like the song.
We like the song. But right. We support the song.
We support Ultralight Beam. Yeah. So let's go to that song now.
I'm trying to keep my faith. We on a ultralight beam. We on a ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything. This is everything. Deliver us serenity. Deliver us peace. Deliver us love. We know we need it. You know we need it. You know we need it. Now I'm in need you now. Pray for Paris, pray for the parents. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. We on a ultralight beam. We on a ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything. Everything.
I'm trying to keep my faith, but I'm looking for more. Somewhere I can feel safe, and in my holy war.
Why send oppression, not blessings? Why, oh, why'd you do me wrong? Whoa. You persecute the weak because it makes you feel so strong. Yeah. Don't have much strength to fight, so I look to the light. Whoa. To make these wrongs turn right, head up high, I look to the light. Hey, cause I know that you'll make everything alright. And I know that you'll take good care of your child. Cause I look to the light.
When they come for you, I will shield your name. I will feel their questions. I will feel your pain. No one can judge. They don't know. They don't know.
Foot on the devil's neck till it drifted Pangea. I'm moving all my family from Chatham to Zambia. Treat the demons just like Pam. I mean, I fuck with your friends, but damn, Gina, I've been this way since Arthur was anteater. Now they wanna hit me with the woo after bam. Trying to snap photos of family. My daughter look just like Sia. You can't see her. You can feel the lyrics, the spirit coming in braille. Tell me of the underground, come and follow the trail. I made Sunday candy, I'm never going to hell. I met Kanye West, I'm never going to fail. You said let's do a good ass job with Chance 3. I hear you gotta sell it to snatch the Grammy. Let's make it so free and the bar so hard that it ain't one gosh darn part. You can't tweet. This is my part, nobody else speak.
This is my part, nobody else speak. This little light of mine. Glory be to God, yeah.
I'ma make sure that they go where they can't go. If they don't wanna ride, I'ma still give them raincoats. Know what God said when he made the first rainbow? Just notice at the end of fucking late for the intro. I'm just having fun with it. You know that a nigga was lost. I laugh in my head cause I bet that my ex looking back like a pillar of salt. Cause they flipped the script on your ass like Wesley and Spike. You cannot mess with the light. Look at the channel from 79.
We on a ultralight beam. We on a ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything.
Hallelujah.
Everything.
I'm trying to keep my faith, but I'm looking for more. Somewhere I can feel safe.
and in my holy war.
Father, this prayer's for everyone that feels they're not good enough. This prayer's for everybody that feels that they're too messed up. For everyone that feels they said I'm sorry too many times. You can never go too far when you can't come back home again. That's why I need
So, that was Ultralight Beam by Kanye West. So, our lovely producer, Rena, just sent us a little article because we asked the question, can you eat poop? Pretty much, or, like, is it good for you?
Are there some species that you can eat
so
poop?
So, pretty much, I think this article is making the argument that fecal recycling is possible because, like, we poo out a lot of nutrients that we actually could have used. So it's not the most efficient digestive system. So this is
what the point after this.
Actually. Oh, yeah. This is what the article said. Although fecal recycling is demonstrably possible, the primary objection in this point has to do with disgust. So it's possible. So they could do it. So you could pretty much, I guess, like, leach out the nutrients. And, yeah, well, a lot of animals do it, so because rabbits actually eat their own poo.
That's
and
what I was going to say.
Extract all the nutrients, yeah.
I can't believe I didn't think about this.
Yeah.
I have had a number of hamsters throughout my young life, and they would eat their own poop, and I was so confused
by
it.
That's why their poo comes out as really hard pellets. Mm-hmm. So pretty much any animal that has really hard, like, pellet poo eats their own poop. Fun fact.
So, I don't know if I even want to go there.
All right, well,
we're not going to go there.
Let's continue on to the next bit. So we know there's, like, a lot of issues facing our oceans. There's ocean acidification, ocean heating, even ocean cooling in some areas. So some currents that actually moderate Earth's temperature are starting to cool down due to, like, melting ice caps, which means temperatures all around the world might go a bit whack. Other issues facing oceans are plastic,
overfishing. Oh, wow. So that
very
at the
in
sink.
Come on. But luckily, there's lots of great conservation organizations out there that help us with this. So me and Mariana are just going to have a bit of a chat about our favorites. One of mine is Sea Shepherd, but I think that's because, like, I kind of like anarchy. So the idea of pretty much being like, I think it's the idea of being like, literally, like, an anti... So Sea Shepherd, for people who don't know, are people who go into international waters and pretty much, like, attack whaling ships and other...
Primarily the Japanese whaling ships.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who... Because there is quite a lot of whaling from, like, Norway, for
example.
Yeah, but
I think it's culturally okay or something.
With the Japanese, they say it's for research, but... You can only do so many stomach content analyses and learn the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And I went to Japan a couple of years ago, and literally, like, every second restaurant had, like, a little sign where it had, like, a picture of a whale, and it was like, they sell whale meat there. Like, not second restaurant, but there were, like, quite a few that you would walk past being like, yeah, that's whale meat.
It's, like, a well-known fact that, like, it's not for research.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a guise.
So Sea Shepherd pretty much just, like, go out and try to, like, ruin their vessels and
attack.
Take over the vessels. Yeah, which is, like, I find so cool. Like,
it makes for great TV.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Whale Wars on Animal Planet, I don't know if it still runs anymore.
Well, what do you think of Sea Shepherd? You're kind of like, oh, controversial.
Well, I think my opinion is also tainted because my dad used to walk in when I was watching Whale Wars and be like, ah, you're watching this again. My dad's from South Africa. I can't do a South African accent. But
that was not a South African
accent. No,
I'm
it was
sorry.
Not. I have no clue how to do one. But he would walk in and be like, oh, this is ridiculous. It's just reality TV. And I, you know, in retrospect, I mean, it kind of is reality TV. I think there's definitely room for organizations that do that kind of demonstration where it is more aggressive. I think to a certain degree it's needed.
Yeah.
I don't think I personally would ever...
Yeah, let's fair. It's pretty dangerous.
You know, interact doing that. I think a younger version of me at the age of 12, when I was very angsty, probably would be like, yeah, save the whales! But now I think, I don't know, it's especially doing a science communication course, I feel like a lot of it has to come from education. And
yeah.
And that's not the easiest way, but I think, I don't know. I have mixed opinions.
Yeah, I guess, like, I think for me, it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, with things like whale conservation, like, that's a well-known fact. Like, it's at the point where it's just, like, communication's not working.
Yeah, true.
So, I don't know. Like, it's kind of similar to Extinction Rebellion. Like, their protests, like, are seen as kind of extreme, but, like, nothing else is working. Like, that's what they're doing. Like, and, yeah, it's kind of, like, sometimes a bit out there for people, but, like, also it's working to a certain extent.
But is it, though? Because they're still... No, actually, there are some accounts of them stopping things.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any others? Any other ocean charities that you like?
I was going to highlight 4Ocean. Really cool organization. Basically, if you don't know them, they produce these bracelets that have little clear plastic beads on them.
I'm wearing one now.
Yeah, I lost mine, unfortunately. Oh. But they're made from recycled plastic that they've gathered in the ocean. So their deal is for every bracelet they sell, I think they collect a pound of plastic trash from the ocean, which is really cool. I think there's also some controversy surrounding them because they operated quite close to the coral restoration place that I was working at in Haiti, because they do work in Haiti. And we wanted to partner with them. And I think there was something about they only do specific kinds of trash. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
So I'm blanking. Well,
but that's the issue with like plastic cleanup sometimes. It is. They do sometimes have to be a bit choosy about it.
Yeah, it's true. Because not all plastic is recyclable, exactly. Unfortunately. Exactly. Just because it has a recycle symbol on it does not mean it's recyclable. Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, look it up online.
And have you heard of the Plastic Cleanup Initiative?
I have not.
Oh, it's really cool. It's really cool. So it's pretty much like meant to be like the biggest ocean cleanup in the world.
Is this the big like arm thing in the ocean?
Yeah, well, it's like a massive, like huge net thing.
Oh yeah,
So yeah, like it pretty much uses the ocean currents to like push it into these like nets, and then collects it, and then boats come through and like clear up the rubbish like every so often. So it shows that like, so they like modeled like how it's gonna work, and they show that a full scale deployment of the system could lead to a 50% reduction of the Great Pacific garbage patch in 5 years' time.
What?
Which is insane.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, they really, like, it's, like, they, it doesn't take much effort because it's a completely, like, passive system. Like, all they use are, like, natural oceanic forces to catch and concentrate the plastic.
You're working with nature, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is way easier than doing it the opposite way.
Although I'm curious about bycatch, actually. I know that they do, I know they do have a way. I think it's like something like because the plastic floats to the top, but sea creatures can like avoid the bottom. And I think they have some sort of system where sea creatures can avoid it.
Yeah. I think it's quite a shallow net, to be honest. I don't think it goes quite deep.
No, it doesn't go deep.
So I think the bycatch just in that sense is reduced.
And I also guess like because they've got like it's not like the rubbish is like trapped in a net. Like, because it's just there, and then, like, the boat comes and cleans it up after.
Yeah, it's like a skimmer.
Hopefully that would reduce bycatch.
Yeah.
I doubt they would have much, otherwise it wouldn't be allowed.
True.
Check that and say next time, next show, whether or not that's the case.
A whole episode on just bycatch. The garbage patch and bycatch.
Yeah, exactly. And it was made by this guy who was, like, literally, like, 18 when he came up with the idea.
Was like, he from Australia?
No, I don't think he's from Australia.
Oh.
Sorry. He's European.
Oh, never mind.
But he was so young when he came up with the idea, and he just got heaps of funding. And I think they've started, like, actually, like, building it and starting to deploy it now, which is really cool. So it'll be cool to see if in 5-10 years' time, all those massive trash islands start to vanish.
Yeah, finally eaten up. The issue is the microplastics, too, though. Like, how are you going to collect those?
That's the issue.
There's a... We can't even get into that story now. We don't
stop using plastic, folks.
Yeah. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
But anyway, that's the show for today. Thank you so much, Mariana, for coming on.
It's a blast. Thank you so much.
It was so much fun. Man, that was so cool. I loved the info that you brought on.
Thanks.
Thank you so much to Raina for producing the show. And yeah, you all just listened to a show all about oceans. Look at iScience.
social media and the website, and we'll see you next week.